Safety Committee.
This is, there's just one volume in here.
Thank you, awesome. Thank you, good afternoon, and I'm already 11 minutes into my time, so I will move fast, talk fast, move fast. I'm Carol Carmody, I'm pleased to be the chair of this committee. Can you hear? I'm joined by my two colleagues, also federal appointees, Mr. Strickland and Mr. Lobby. All three of us have strong safety backgrounds, and we're very pleased and eager to serve on this committee. You all have the agenda. May I have a motion to approve the agenda, if there are no changes? All in favor?
Aye.
And may I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second? So moved. Well, we have two items today, information items. Officer Lavin, Safety Officer Lavin, will give us an overview of the NTSB's findings from the L'Enfant Plaza accident of 2015, as well as an update on the WMATA efforts to meet those recommendations. And the second item is a briefing on the McPherson Square incident last March. So without further ado, I'll turn the meeting over to you, Mr. Lavin. Thank you.
Thank you.
I should have had this earlier. I would have cut you off.
Morning, Chair Carmody and committee members. I would like to welcome you and the other new federal representatives, Mr. Strickland and Mr. Lobby, to the WMATA Board of Directors. And I'm looking forward to working with all of you to strengthen the safety culture here. Last month, we promised a more complete briefing on the NTSB accident report on the L'Enfant Plaza incident, and I'm providing that to you today. Just a quick background, the NTSB who conducted the investigation is an independent investigatory body. Their overall mission is to promote safety and transportation, including investigations into accidents and making recommendations. This is the 12th report by the NTSB on WMATA. According to the testimony on May 3rd, there have been 101 recommendations made to WMATA since 1970, and 24 new ones after the acceptance of the report of the L'Enfant Plaza Station incident report. Prior to acceptance of the report, WMATA had 7 open and acceptable recommendations. 4 of those were related to previous, I'm sorry, 3 of those were related to previous incidents, 4 were related to the L'Enfant Plaza incident. 7 are hazards I classified by WMATA as 1 Category 1, 4 Category 2, 1 Category 3, and 1 Category 4. The synopsis of the incident is on January 12, 2015, a southbound yellow train on the yellow line encountered smoke in the tunnel. The southbound yellow line train was unable to return to the station before a loss of third rail power. Several passengers self-evacuated, others were assisted. 91 individuals were injured. There was 1 fatality. The NTSB's probable cause of the event identified a prolonged short circuit that consumed the power system components, resulting from the transit agency's ineffective inspection and maintenance practices. The investigation revealed several deficiencies, inspection and maintenance procedures, WMATA's initial response to smoke, tunnel ventilation systems and procedures, rail car ventilation procedures, emergency response, oversight, and management. And the investigation identified 43 findings. The listings of those findings is in the handout. The NTSB, as part of that report, issued 31 recommendations. 24 of those were directly to Metro. Of those 24, 18 can be tied to existing FTA, TOC, or internal caps. And of the other 5, there are procedural changes that have either been implemented or in progress. For clarity, 4 of them are in progress, 1 has been implemented. An example of how one of the recommendations tied to several others is on this slide. You can see that recommendation R1624 ties into early action safety items, several previous NTSB recs, as well as FTA SMI caps, and FTA Safety Directive 16.3. actions taken since January 2015, SOPs have been revised and reviewed by emergency management. Conditions requiring emergency clarification have been identified. So what that means is when there's an incident, they have to define what an emergency is and then how do you react to that emergency based on their playbook. You have employees refreshed in SOPs as part of safety stand downs, which was part of safety FTA Safety Directive 16.3. The ROC and maintenance personnel have been retrained also as part of FTA Safety Directive 16.3. And new ROC control annual recertification tests are under development as part of an FTA SMI. This next slide just gives you where the recommendations land as far as responsibility. The last column on the bottom where it says other, those are areas that may be long-term and have to be addressed through capital funding, as well as they bleed over into several areas for developing procedures. And the next steps going forward will be to cross-reference all recommendations deficiencies, develop detailed corrective action plans, identify the financial impact of implementing the recommendations, and submit those our response to the NTSB for approval by August 20th, 2016. I'll take any questions on that if you have any.
Are there any questions? Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. Mr. Laban, I was chair of the safety committee last year. One of the unresolved issues at that point was a bullet in your slide where you say southbound Yellow Line train was unable to return to the station before loss of third rail power. And my question is, did the NTSB make a finding as to what caused that loss of power? Was it the fire that consumed the cabling and cut off the electricity to the third rail, or did the rail operation control center affirmatively cut off the power to the train? The reason that's relevant, as you can understand this question, as to why, since there was room in the station for that train to get back into the station and unload the passengers, why that didn't happen.
Okay, it's my understanding that the one substation or one feeder had opened due to overload because of the shorting to the ground. The other substation that would have fed from the opposite direction, at the point when the cables went and the cables opened, that lost that path of electricity to feed the third rail. And with the other substation being down, there was no third rail power out there at the location. But I can double check and clarify that that's accurate, but I believe that was the testimony at the NTSB hearing on May 3rd.
Have that ability to bring the train back into the station, or whether the fire had so consumed the electric power that he was sort of devoid of that ability at that point.
I believe it to be the latter, but I'll confirm.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have one question, and I'm sorry if I missed this in your presentation. The chart showing the NTSB recommendations, 31, 24 to Metro, you're showing 18.5 and then one which is noted as under review. Which one is that and how long has it been under review?
I'm sorry, which one?
What is the one that's under review? I'm just curious as to know.
Okay.
The others all seem to be in progress of some sort. So.
It's R1610. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with the capacity of tunnel vent fans. So we'd have to do an analysis of the CFM or to identify what type of capital program.
Of the tunnel fans, you said?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And is there an anticipated date when that will be done?
I believe it's supposed to be October of 2016.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anything else? Any questions? Mr. Lobby.
Thank you. I know you haven't been here very long, Mr. Levin, but I wanted to ask with the different changes that have happened with the safety systems at Washington Metro, if this accident or this situation occurred today in the same place, what would be different?
Well, I'd like to hope that you wouldn't have the same accident because you do have a more robust inspection program, which would identify these cables. There is an ongoing program, not necessarily related to Well, it actually is related. They're changing all the orange boots out, so you would not get that same type of failure. So I wouldn't view it in terms of a response to an event. Hopefully, we're getting to a place where we don't have the event.
Certainly, but if we had another event with a train in that position with smoke in the tunnel for whatever reason, would we be able to move the train out of the tunnel? Would we respond differently? Would we do different things with the exhaust fans? Have those different procedures been put in place to come out with a different response?
Some of them have, such as the shutting down of the ventilation for the entire car. That procedure is in place. There's also has been retraining for the people in the rail control center, and there's also computer-based training that's being developed to improve that further.
So how would they respond to a similar accident? Would they back the train out? Would they leave it in place? What would they do?
Well, first you'd have to look at the local conditions, because the question is whether you can back the train out if the electrical power is there, depending on that event. So I don't necessarily know, even if it today, if the electrical power is there, you're not there, you're not going to back a train out. But I would, you know, this is something, you know, I have 1 month on the job. Today is my anniversary, so these are things.
Happy anniversary to you.
So I'm hoping I'm not giving you incomplete answers, but this is something I have to delve into further.
No, thank you for that. And I didn't expect you to have all the answers, but as we move forward, we certainly want different results in the future, and there's lots of different elements here to look at. And I know you've been putting things in place. I know that Paul has also been putting things in place, I think it's important to understand what different things can happen. So as you put these in place, I think it's important to put it in perspective of some of the incidents we've had in the past.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Ms. Porter. This is probably a comment more to ourselves than to the staff, but I think we should consider having regular updates on the progress in responding to these recommendations and completing the work that we need to do.
I agree. Other questions, or shall we move on? All right, please move on.
Okay, and I think this next part of the presentation speaks to Mr. Lobby's concerns. And what I'm going to speak about is the McPherson Square fire, where they had this cable incident that led to the shutdown of the system for 26 hours. And then beyond that, the week prior to my coming here, you had the Federal Center event where you had this catastrophic failure of an insulator. So what I did is I sat and I tried to look at this as a holistic traction power system problem. And I reached out to the FTA and I requested a 90-day extension on that investigation for McPherson. So the purpose of that is that we shouldn't be looking at these incidents in isolation. And when I came on board, I started, looking at different areas. And I think the analogy most people give me is I'm drinking water from a fire hose, because there's a lot of pots boiling. But one of the areas I looked at is we have over 100 open accident investigations in SAFE. Okay. So of those 100, 29 of them are directly related in some fashion or another to the traction power system, whether it's an insulator or an arcing cable. So what I did is I reached out to the FTA in partnership with them. They gave me a 90-day extension. And as part of that, this is going to take a holistic overview of the traction power system. We're going to look at the maintenance testing inspection program. Are those processes effective? Are they giving us the desired results? And if the answer is no, then we need to change those processes. We also want to look at the design of the third rail from a standpoint of how do we affix the cables. Because one of the concerns I have is that one of the main failures at LaFont was this boot or this blow dryer that as a connection point. Now, coming from an environment in New York City Transit, we wouldn't have had that boot. That wire would have been affixed directly to the third rail, and that point of failure wouldn't have been there. So the question I would have is, from a design standpoint, can we eliminate that point of failure? The other thing we want to look at is the number of protection boards that are down, and that was brought up in the NTSB hearing. So my question is if you have a large number of protection boards down, then is it a design issue that it's a poor design, or is it a quality assurance issue where we're not installing them according to the manufacturer's recommendation? Then that next takes us into the arcing insulator issues. So with the arcing insulators, is it a failure of the insulator, or is it a failure of our maintenance programs to properly clean the tracks, clean the drains, the water abatement, all of those areas that we should be looking at that need to be addressed. So rather than work in isolation, I reached out to APTA and I requested a peer review so that we can get the best minds in the country down to WMATA to look at all of these elements, and including an internal review to see, from a zero-based budget standpoint, do we have the resources to do this as far as manpower, as far as equipment? And so there's probably 14 different items I want to look at as part of this peer review. And the FTA was invited to attend as well. So if you have any questions on that, I'd be glad to speak on it.
Are there any questions? Ms. Porter.
I very much appreciate your focus on, you know, this in a holistic way. I think that's the way to look at it. I would encourage us, when we're talking about safety issues, not to just focus on engineering and infrastructure. This agency has had a consistent problem communicating to riders during safety situations or emergency situations. I think we have done better recently, but it still can be a real problem when riders do things that are unexpected or they don't have the right information and make poor choices. We've had that happen repeatedly in the past. So I encourage you to also look, as part of your overview of system issues, to look at the communications, the way and the kind, and who provides them. Communications we provide to riders in emergency situations.
Okay.
Thank you. Ms. Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Levin. As you look through this, could you come back to the board with any information regarding prior peer reviews that deal with the broader spectrum of what you're looking at? It would be interesting to see what we have had before and what we will learn going forward.
Yeah, I'm already looking at that to some degree, because we've had issues where they did dust analysis in the tunnels to determine how much concentration of different elements are actually tracking and sticking to different types of insulators. We've also done studies as far as failure rates of insulators, at what point do they fail, under what conditions. So that will be part of the analysis.
Other questions? Yes, Mr. Dorsey.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. So as part of this sort of peer review that we're going to be able to do, are we also going to get a comparative analysis of how other transit systems either have managed these issues or what is fundamentally different about those that, you know, using your New York example, our particular issue wouldn't have been there because of the design difference? Are we going to get a sense of that so that we can make some policy decisions moving forward?
That's the intent, yes.
Wonderful. And just as a comment, Mr. Levin, I mean, everything that you've just outlined sounds terrific, but it does beg the question, and this is not an indictment of the two of you, obviously, because this is all from before your time, but why in the world weren't we doing that before, taking that kind of holistic look as these problems manifest? And I don't expect you to answer, it's just a rhetorical question, that, you know, it's a shame that we got to the point where it was loss of life and an overall crisis that got us to doing what should have been really a fundamental part of our work all along. So that's just really a call to all of us more than any specific question to you.
I'd like to answer it anyway.
Okay.
One of the things I looked at when I got on board was the structure of your safety department. And one of the gaping holes in your safety department is that although you have people who respond and investigate accidents, you don't have a true dedicated investigative body, and that's the one thing I'd like to create here. Similar on a smaller scale than the NTSB, but you need people dedicated to do nothing but investigations of these types so that you surface the problems before they become events.
Mr. Coleman.
Mr. Levin, in terms of the holistic approach, I would also encourage you to look at it in terms of time as to what's happened over the last 10 or 15 years. The reason I suggested is that the hairdryer and the insulator incidents seem to be of recent vintage. They seem to be something that's only begun to happen, at least to the board's knowledge, in the last 18 months, 2 years. And so I'm wondering whether it reflects a failure of maintenance that's built up over time, or a failure of the equipment and the parts or whether it's happened and, you know, the incidents are out there in the reporting and the numbers, but it just hasn't been brought to the board and the public's attention. So I'd be curious for you to go back and let us know what's happened in the third world power system over a longer period of time.
Okay, there's 2 points that I'd like to bring out in response to that. One is we are all looking at historical data. The question is how valuable is that data because of the way it was captured? So that may be something we have to do going forward, is to capture the information differently so it's more useful. As far as this being a new 18-month phenomenon, I would have a different perception of that for this reason. When we went back and we started looking at this holistic approach, the fact that they had already performed dust analysis on insulators because of arcing insulator incidents suggests to me that there's a long history here. The question is was those issues that were surfaced ever addressed in a permanent and effective manner, which is what we need to do going forward.
And I'd be interested as a board member to know if there were those incidents 2, 3, 4 years ago, what happened to those reports? Did they come to the attention of senior management? Did they come to the attention of the board?
Okay, that'll be part of the analysis as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Lobby.
Since we're talking about history, I know that there's been a number of NTSB investigations on Washington Metro. Some of them impacted roadway worker protection and some unfortunate fatalities that occurred to Metro employees inspecting track a few years back. But I know that next month we have on the agenda, we're going to talk about roadway worker protection. And I'd just like to ask for some information, not necessarily now, but some information on how roadway worker protection is being supported, especially with SafeTrack going on and so much activity along the right-of-way. As I said in an earlier meeting, I'm on the Orange Line, and there's lots of heavy equipment out there. There's lots of equipment with booms that can foul a track. There's lots of people out there, and the trains are pretty much maintaining track speed through there. And I'd like to make sure that we're looking at those issues that may occur along there, and we're making sure that we have the right protection for both the people that are working along the right of way, trying to implement safe track, and the folks that are riding on Metro to make sure that we don't have any incidents in that area. There's a lot of activity, and this is unprecedented. There's much more risk when you have so many things going on, and I'm sure you're looking at that. But I think I personally would like to know how we're maintaining safety during this period of transition.
Okay, I could speak on both of those. As far as the safe track goes, you have a RIC on the ground, and you also have the mobile command. So that gives you a second layer of protection as far as coordinating positions of vehicles, and there's over 20 vehicles out there, so I absolutely understand your concern. From a safety standpoint, we have safety officers going on each tour around the clock, checking the roadway worker protection. Any hazards that are identified are being immediately addressed and brought to the attention of the RIC. For example, if they see a piece of work vehicle that's not chocked properly or doesn't have a handbrake applied, these are the things we're looking at to verify that they're not occurring. As far as your question about RWP, I know there's a recommendation that's been open since 2008, and one of the things I'd like to point out is one of my first actions when I got here, I assigned 3 of my brightest and best people I have, you know, based on my interviews, to look at RWP. And one of the concerns I have is that when they came back to me, one of the first rounds of draft they gave me is they said to me, well, this technology, and I'm not going to name the technology, obviously, may not be the best. It may not give us any substantial benefit, but this is the quickest way to close the cap. So I told them, my goal is not to close caps on RWP. It's to improve RWP. So as part of what I'm doing is my assessment here for a month is I'm looking at the vulnerabilities we have. And from what I can see, it appears that when you're doing construction-type activities such as SafeTrack, there's a very strong RWP program in that area. My goal is to seek out where the vulnerabilities are and then address those, whether it satisfies a cap or not, to come up with some level of assurance that we're doing intermediate measures to address those.
Thank you. Thank you. Anything else? Then I guess the next item is the future agendas.
And I have a comment on that. I noticed on July 14th you have a number of items. But I'd like an update then on the NTSB recommendations, much like you did today. I know you're working towards a date in August for response to the NTSB. So I would assume by July you have most of those at least partially wrapped up, but I'd like to know that. And I'm also looking, as we go through these recommendations, I was struck in the NTSB report in the findings by two things. One, that in many cases there were no procedures, which was shocking, but there were none. And in other cases there were procedures, but they were not followed. So as we go through these, I'd like to know what procedures have been improved, updated, written, what training is done that implements those, and track that along as we go, because it's not just seeing the chart of where we are doesn't give me the whole story of what's actually happening. So that's my hope as we go forward in July. As far as I'm concerned, the other items seem reasonable. Is there other thoughts or comments on those? Any additions to those? And again, in September, I guess we would have a final wrap-up on what you told the NTSB. It'll be after the fact by then, so.
With the one exception, perhaps the October assessment for the
tunnel fan, exactly. Thank you. All right. Anyone else? Comments? Questions from anyone? Well, we're 9 minutes over time.
It's all right.
Do I get penalized for that?
You started 10 minutes late, so you made up a minute. You made up a minute.
I,